So now I'd like to introduce Dr. Blatchford.
I'll get rid of that. And this is a salmon fishing trip. We took up the coast of British Columbia last year, and I invited a group of doctors to come on that. We're doing it again next year. So if any of you are interested in salmon fishing, let me know. And this is another meeting that we're doing. We also do a ski trip first week in March. It will be at Park City. The first part of the week we'll be at Park City skiing. We did it last year, and we'll be at the end of the week we'll be at Whistler. So if any of your skiers want to go on a ski trip with us, you can do that. But let's get to tonight. So let's talk about this, profitability in challenging times. Now, first off, you're going to hear a little bit of my background on this, and my perspective on this is that I believe that these are challenging times, number one. Let's just face the fact. Tonight we're having, gee whiz, when Larry and I scheduled this, we did not know the president would be coming on television tonight to talk about challenging times. So obviously this is very timely, Larry.
It is. His first talk in a year and a half.
Yeah. I mean, so we hit it right on the money with this one. But hopefully our answers will be at least as good as his.
Yeah, right.
But here's the interesting thing I want all of you to think about. We have a crisis every time we have a presidential election. If you remember clear back, and this is, I won't go back several presidents, but when Bill Clinton ran for president, the mantra was, it's the economy, stupid. I mean, that was what it was. He inherited a recession. George W. inherited a recession from him. This happens every time. And I think what's happening is I think the press is becoming more effective and more efficient at creating these things.
Yeah.
You see, what causes a recession? What causes a recession is people quit spending money. I was just doing a little research on this 2 days ago. I happen to be involved in a coaching program that I go to Chicago four times a year. A fellow named Dan Sullivan, who is quite a thinker, and he put a lot of questions in our mind. I was doing a little research. Right now, there are several, and I've heard several different sources, as high as $7 trillion in cash positions by, you know, combination out there in the world money market. Large funds, large money managers are holding cash. Now, this means they're not investing this money, which means there's less money out there to loan to people for business, et cetera. There's less money in circulation because these people are holding large amounts of cash. And so this is reality. This is definitely reality. It's not something, it's not some figment of imagination. It started out as a thought process, and then people start thinking about it, and pretty soon it becomes reality. So it's real. In the last year, in 07, and I'm going to tell you about 07, my clients averaged over $150,000 of increase in their net income. I'm not bragging about the last quarter. I had a group of doctors on a teleconference last night, and with a couple exceptions, they're all doing very well and having good months, but there are doctors. And it depends, again, on the part of the country you're in, what's going on, especially the upper Midwest Rust Belt areas that you've relied on heavy manufacturing. You're seeing quite a shift in your economic base. Jobs are going offshore, and that's probably not going to turn around in most of our lifetime. I mean, our heavy manufacturing just can't compete with people in foreign countries, and so that's shifting. So things are a little more challenging, and when things become challenging, people hold back. They're still earning money. Now, as Larry said, I've weathered this a few times, and I was practicing dentistry, general dentistry, in Corvallis, Oregon, back in the 80s. In the early 80s, some of you may remember that mortgage interest rates hit 20%.
That's right.
People in California quit building houses. Up here in Oregon, we used to be a timber state. We used to cut timber, and we quit logging. We quit logging, the mills shut down, and we had an 18% unemployment rate in Oregon for a year and a half. Now, people would come into my practice and say, you know, we present treatment to them, and we talk about, well, I can't do that right now. You know, it's the economy and all. Well, here was the facts. The facts in that situation was Corvallis was a college town. Our biggest employer was Oregon State University. By the way, poised to beat Southern California Thursday night in football. It's going to show Southern Cal a thing or two. But our second biggest employer was Hewlett-Packard Research Division. These people are all fully employed. The third biggest employer was CH2M Hill, a big engineering firm. And the rest of it was all federal government. EPA laboratory, forest labs, etc. So wait a minute. How's the economy affecting you right now, Mr. Smith? You're fully employed, correct? Yes. Being paid full pay? Yes. Your spouse fully employed? Yes. How's it affecting you? Well, bottom line is, it's really not. Now, people today are talking about high price of gasoline. But let's be real about this. How many gallons of gasoline does the average family buy in a year? So it goes up $2 a gallon. You know, this is not catastrophic. My brothers, Larry knows, my brothers are farmers, and I was up on their farm last weekend, and we pulled up to his big tank farm there to fill up his pickup with fuel, and I said, my gosh, that's a big tank. How much does that thing hold? He said, it holds 55,000 gallons. I said, 55,000 gallons? You're looking at $200,000. Fill it up, aren't you? And he says, well, yeah, but I only buy 10,000 gallons at a time right now because the price may fluctuate a dollar a week. So the average family, how much gasoline do you spend in a year? So that's not a major issue, but people are making it a big issue. Then they talk about the high price of food, and yes, some food prices have gone up, but you'll notice no one out there on the news is talking about the high income farmers have. Nobody's talking about that. Nobody's talking about the high income that areas that are selling fuel, in other words, pumping oil out of the ground, are going through. I have clients in Oklahoma, and they're just going gangbusters because they say, hey, everybody's got money. Clients in Alberta, Canada, everybody has money. Clients in certain parts of Texas where they're pumping it out of the ground. So you see, this is all basically something in people's minds. So you as the leaders, I'm getting a little out of order here on some of our slides, but I have a slide there that says the panic leader syndrome. I'm going to tell you, doctors, a verboten subject in your office is the economy. If you come in and talk to your staff and tell your staff how your stock portfolio went down over the weekend, they're going to buy into this thing hook, line, and sinker. And they are going to start thinking in their mind that no one, that is your patients, can afford dental work. And if your patients, if your staff and the doctor are thinking along these terms, guess what patients will start doing? I mean, they pick up on that in a heartbeat, and you're not selling any dentistry. So the economy is off limits in your practice. And if a patient brings up the economy, what you need to say is, how's, you know, when somebody says, how's business, doc? I'm going to borrow a phrase from, it's either Brian Tracy or Zig Ziglar, and the answer is unbelievable. Now, it can be unbelievably good or unbelievably bad. You don't have to fill it in. It's unbelievable. And you have to be positive. And I'm going to challenge every doctor on this call to every day, you need to bring some good news to your office. You need to bring some good news in, and you need to be the positive force in their life as far as what's going on out there. Don't let them buy into this whole thing. So that's the panic leader syndrome. And when you have a day that the production is down, well, look for what you're doing inside. Are you literally doing everything you can do internally to make this happen and make it go? In other words, we're going to ask. I just did a seminar in Portland last week, and there was an office there that this year, with three team members, she's pushing $2 million. She's in a small town of 8,000 people. Larry, I've mentioned this lady before. It's April Ziegler. She's chapter two in our book.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing
is...
Very
good book, by the way. Everybody should get it.
Thank you. If you don't have the book, get on our website and get it. But it's 23 case studies. But she's doing right at 2 million. She did 1.6 last year, and she's $200,000 to $300,000 ahead of that this year. But here's an interesting thing. She and her team, over the last 4 years, have read and basically done cliff notes, book reports, on 48 books. Half of them have been sales books. They choose.
That's how you learn, isn't it?
Well, that's what I've learned. Yeah. And they choose not to participate in the recession. They said even in Washington, by the way, the Seattle area is not having a recession. My wife and I were recently in Seattle on business, looking out our hotel window. We counted 19 building cranes that we could see out of our field of view. It looks like Dubai. There's no recession in Seattle. And there are many parts of the country there's no recession. So, you know, let's not buy into this thing. So panic leader syndrome is when you start talking about the economy, you start talking about how bad things are, and it's your job to not do that. You're the leader, and you're just like the football quarterback, and you're at the halftime, and your team is down 30-0. Guess what? That coach doesn't get paid to go in there and tell them to give up. Coach goes in there and tells them, okay, guys, the game is a lot closer than what the scoreboard indicates. We've done this in the first quarter. We've failed in this area. We need to go back in there and change this in the second half, and we're going to get back in that game, and we've got a chance to pull this thing out.
Go, team, go.
Go, team, go.
Right.
That's your job.
Right.
And, Larry, I don't know if you've heard me say this, but a few years ago, again, during a recession, I had a client up in British Columbia that said he was the third best-paid actor in British Columbia. And we said his name was Joe Zucchiati. And we all asked him, what do you mean by that? And first off, I said, well, who are the other two? He said, Michael J. Fox, number one, MacGyver's number two. Joe Zucchiati's number three. And I said, what do you mean by that, Joe? You're the third best-paid actor in British Columbia. At that time, and this was almost 20 years ago, and he said, you know, I make about $100,000 a year for being a dentist. I get another $100,000 a year to manage this practice very effectively, and yet his overhead really under control. And I get the balance, and at that time he was making about $350,000, and 20 years ago that was serious money for a dentist. And he said, I get paid $150,000 a year to go in there and act like a leader. He says, do I feel like a leader at all times? No. Doesn't matter. I get paid to act like a leader. And that's what we have to do during times like this, is your jobs, is you're getting paid the big bucks to go in there and act like a leader, and leaders don't act panicky. So, enough said about that. So leadership is a crucial part of this message for you, and I know you've heard a lot about this, and we talk leadership, but I've had a chance to coach some more than 2,500 offices, and I will tell you, it's the most important thing that you can do to make your practice work successfully, and it's the first area that goes south when things start going poorly. You know, for example, I mean, Pete Carroll, who's the head football coach of Southern California, has done an outstanding job of putting that program together. But you know, Larry, I think I could probably coach his team for the rest of the season and do quite well.
Because they know what to do.
They know what to do. I mean, if he has a losing season, it's going to take, or not doing quite as well, it's going to take every ounce in Pete Carroll's body to coach that team and turn that team around and produce those winning seasons. So in other words, anybody can coach when the team is winning and the bands are playing and the crowds are cheering. But when things are going a little bit south, a little bit sour, that's when it really tests your strength as a leader.
Right.
And that's what we're in right now. And you're going to see that. You're going to see that in our politicians the next few weeks, and I think that's what we're seeing right now. So in other words, the number one thing that leaders do is you've got to make a commitment to be positive. That's, to me, is paramount for your success. You have to make an absolute commitment to be positive and don't get sucked into any negativity, because in case you haven't noticed, the public loves negative news. Positive news doesn't sell. I mean, watch the weather. The Weather Channel, what do they show? I mean, we're talking some, if I can be apolitical, let's talk about the weather. We're not talking politics here. We're talking the weather. Did you read in the news last year last week that the weather in the Northwest was absolutely marvelous? You know, did you read about the fact that,
no,
you know, it's 75 in the daytime and it was 23 here yesterday morning? I mean, how could it be better? Clear blue sky, light breeze blowing, beautiful crisp mornings. You don't read about that. What do you read about? You read about the hurricanes. You read about the floods. You read about droughts. You read about, you know, you read bad news. The public likes negative. You as leaders have to stay positive. Now, on your leadership, I suggest some kind of a vision statement of who are we, what do we do, and for whom do we do it. Now, I'm going to be a little bit facetious right now with you, but when we're answering the question, for whom do we do it? So we have a 6% unemployment rate in this country. Don't panic. Some of you took Economics 101 when you were college freshmen, and I remember as a liberal college freshman, I've changed my views a lot since then, but as a liberal college freshman, I couldn't understand how you could have an ideal economy in a free market society and you needed a 5% unemployment rate. I thought, well, gee, everybody needs a job, don't they? Well, now being an employer, I understand that we need a few unemployed people out there so I can grow my business. So we have a 6% unemployment ratio right now. So for whom do we do it? We do it for those 94% that are still working. And this is a message that I brought to my staff back when we had that 18% unemployment rate in Oregon in 1981. I said, let's specialize in the 82% that are still working.
Stay
and
positive.
Yes, say again, Larry?
The glass is half full, right?
Well, exactly. And this is your choice. 6% unemployment or a 94% employment rate. And I focus on the 94% that are still working. And that's what I'm going to encourage all of you to do. So that's the leadership aspect of this. And your job as a leader is to go in there and show some passion. Be excited about showing up for work. Your team will mirror your mood. And if your mood is doom and gloom, your team will mirror that mood, your patients will mirror it, and your results are going to be poor. But if you go in there, and I'm not saying Pollyanna, I want you to understand, we're going to show you some things in a moment to help you work with your overhead during this time, but you've got to be positive. You don't have a choice. And I'm going to tell you, it's worth $100,000 a year to you to do this. And I'm saying, you know, for $100,000, I can be a heck of an actor. And sometimes that's what we have to do. All right, let's talk about some numbers to watch. And I think this is probably what you all came for rather than my pep talk, perhaps. But in any dental practice, in any business, there are certain numbers that you better pay attention to. And I know that dentists are not, for the most part, real numbers people. You didn't go into dentistry for your love of math. As Larry knows, my wife and I have our older daughter who is 36 years old, is a senior in dental school, and I remember when she was doing an interview at one of the dental schools, she was asked to, before the interviewing professor even sat down, he said, well, Stina, could you tell me what you've done to distinguish yourself academically? And she said, well, I have two bachelor's degrees, and she had a grade point of 367 or 368, and I don't know what she had in science, she told him. And he said, well, I noticed here in your DAT, you didn't score very well in the math portion. And she looked at him, and she said, and that is exactly why I'm not becoming an engineer. Next question, please. So a lot of dentists aren't really into numbers. I happen to like numbers, and I happen to like the numbers of business. So I'm going to show you some numbers that I want you to pay attention to. If we're in challenging times, I'm going to show you why overhead is so much more important. Now, the average overhead in a dental practice in the United States, and I got these figures 2 years ago when I spoke to the ADA in San Francisco, the average overhead was 74%. Now, Larry, I'm speaking about a general practice solo practitioner, and I presume that's what most of our people on the call are.
And that's average, so there's some that are higher.
Some that are higher, some that are lower. And I rounded it up to 75% to make the math on this just be a little easier to work with. But if we take the typical, you can see my slides now, the million-dollar practice, that means we have a 75% overhead. That's $750,000 of overhead. Now that gives that practice a net of $250,000. Now, that's a really good net. I mean, that definitely puts you in the category that all the politicians talk about as being wealthy. I know a lot of you making $250,000 or even more don't feel wealthy, but you know that puts you in the top 5% of wage earners in this country. If you look at that, the graph of wage earners, it goes up dramatically. I mean, it comes across the chart at a fairly flat line. It comes gradually moving up towards 100. And once you're hitting $250,000, that line is going straight up. And it's true there are a lot of people way up above us, but $250,000 puts you in a very, very nice position. Now, that's very good, but let's take a look at what happens now if you're not paying attention to overhead. And your income, your gross income, that is your production collections, slip by 10%. Now, for the most part, yes, your laboratory bill will be slightly lower, your supply bill will be slightly lower, but for the most part, your overhead doesn't change all that much. And all of a sudden, your net income dropped to $150,000. So a 10% reduction in production or collections, that's a 40% reduction in net income. That's serious.
Very serious.
That's a 40% drop in net. And unless you're paying attention to this, all of a sudden you're three quarters of the way through the year and you're in big trouble. You're not able to fund your pension plan. You're not able to fund perhaps children's educational funds. You might not even be paying all your bills. And I've seen a lot of doctors have come to me in the last few months, not so much clients, but people who are prospects, and they've run a huge credit card debt, trying to keep their bills paid and wondering what's going on. I haven't had credit card debt in years, and all of a sudden I'm running up these huge credit card bills. Well, they're paying their last note.
Presentation mode is on. Only organizers can be heard.
Statement, they can't pay it. And here's your answer right there. There's your answer. Now, if we just go a little bit further, and in this case, you see I did drop the expenses a little bit because of the lab bill and supply bill going down, but a 20% drop in production, and my gosh, your net drops clear down in many cases below $100,000. And most of you on this call, if you've been living on $250,000, can't get by at $100,000. Now, your team members and the public is not very sensitive, or let me put it this way, not very sympathetic towards this. So this is not a conversation that you want to have around the office. This is not a conversation. These are not numbers that you want to throw out to your team and expect them to feel sorry for you. Because I can tell you, if your income drops to 100, there's not a team member you have that feels sorry for you. Well, they understand that that's not enough for you and all that sort of thing, but don't expect a sympathetic ear from your staff. And don't ever share any of these thoughts or any of these things with the public, with your patients. Because the patients all believe that we are all filthy rich. So they don't want to hear it. But I want you to be realistic. I want you to know this. So we do need to know what the overhead is. Now, I'm going to show you an alternative to that. And this is very doable. And the interesting thing is that when times are good, people aren't as concerned about overhead. And so it's okay to let that overhead run up there to 75%. And Larry, you're right. I've seen many doctors that I've had an opportunity to sit down and, you know, and share numbers with that are way over 75% overhead. And especially with what's going on right now, a little drop in production, and wow, we're up there. So things were really good. There wasn't a lot of impetus to get overhead down, and so we bounced along at 75%. Now, I've been teaching, and I've proven over and over and over again that we can have a 50 to 60% overhead is easy to accomplish, and it's very doable. And it really doesn't matter what your production level is. You know, I got off the phone today with a doctor that I met several years ago that had a larger staff, a larger overhead, and a larger gross. Today, he has a smaller gross, a smaller staff, lower overhead, and a higher net. And he works one less day a week, and he works about 20 less days a year. Now, who's so smart? I say it's the net income that counts. But if you're doing $1 million, and you've chosen a 60% overhead, you have a $400,000 net. Now if it drops 10%, hey, wait a minute, we're still at a $300,000 net. So you see, this is making a lot more sense. So let's take a look at this. And for those of you taking, so any questions on that part? Maybe we should just pop a few questions at this point before I show you this budget.
Conversation mode is on.
Okay,
everyone
so
can now be heard.
Just press *6 if anybody has any questions. Introduce yourself. Do we have any questions for Bill?
Okay, Mom.
Bill, I'm gonna turn the quieted down. Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Too noisy.
Q&A mode is on. Participants may now unmute themselves.
Okay.
All right, I'm going to show you a budget now. I think this is real important. You all take some notes on this. And this is an abbreviated budget. This is an abbreviated budget or a profit and loss statement for a practice. It's different than a profit and loss statement. It's more of a budget, we'll call it. But I'm going to show you the averages for each of these items. I'm going to show you what we recommend. And then what I'd like you to do, and some of you may know these numbers and you may not. If you know these numbers, put a third column over there to the side what your percentages are. And if you don't know these numbers, I would challenge you to go back to your office, go back to your profit and loss statement for the last, probably have it through seven months, probably have it through August by this point, and take a look at what your year-to-date figures are. Now, these are percentages to gross income. These are percentages to collections. And we're going to use staff first. Now, staff includes salaries, and it's all staff members except associates. So it would be the hygienist, the assistant, and the administrative people. It also includes all payroll costs. Now, payroll costs include matching Social Security, workman's compensation, which you pay fully, medical insurance, and any pension plans you may be involved in. Now, we take a look at the average, and out here on the West Coast, that's creeping up 32-33%. Hygienists are making $500 a day. East Coast, a little bit less. Midwest, a little bit less than that. Different parts of the country are slightly different. But what I find normally is that percentages are fairly close, because if salaries are lower in a particular region, it generally means fees are lower also. In other words, salaries are lower, cost of living is lower. And so dental fees for the work, the treatment you do, and salaries tend to coincide. So staff salaries run right around 30%. Now, we'll list several of these. Lab runs between 8 and 9. 8 and 9% of your gross is going to your laboratory. Now, if for doctors that have CAD-CAM technology in their office and are doing some of that themselves, then what you have to do to get an accurate lab bill is to actually do some math and say, okay, if I pay $250 or $200 or $300, whatever you pay for Crown & Bridge, then you have to take those units and plug it in and extrapolate what your lab percentage would be, and you'll see why in a moment. Rent usually runs 3 to 5. Equipment is 3 to 5. So in other words, 6 to 10% for facility. And that's always a number that I use. And, for example, talking to a doctor today who's getting ready to move, we went through the math with him and what his new rent would be, what the leasehold improvements will be, what his equipment will be. And it turns out that it's almost $10,000. And I said, well, that works great, but you're going to have to do $100,000 a month to make that pencil, or understand that you're going to raise your overhead dramatically. And so he decided to cut down the size of the office. So in other words, he's being proactive about how big of an office he gets. He's doing about $65,000 to $75,000 a month currently, and he's getting ready to build an office that he needs to do another $25,000 a month. And I'm saying, be careful. Office supplies, that'd be paper and things like that, 1 to 2%. Dental supplies, 5 to 6%. And by the way, that's where I see most doctors playing the most, working, trying to save a little bit on dental supplies. Absolute waste of time, because if you save 20%, we're talking about 1%. So, and then marketing usually is 0. And the other, which is X, makes my equation come out correct. And this would be all your miscellaneous expenses. That would be CE, insurance policies that you have in force, utilities, travel, all the miscellaneous things, X. And the total, 74%. Now, I'm going to show you what we recommend. We recommend 14 to 20%. Now, again, I want to emphasize, I'm talking about general dentists in solo practice. In other words, generally what I find in group practices or in partnerships, that percentage goes up, which is always interesting, but it does. And then if you have, why 15? Somebody would say, well, I'd like to have 15. If you have a high mix of high-end treatment, in other words, if you're a dentist doing a lot of large restorative cases, a lot of cosmetic cases, you see a smaller number of patients, and therefore you can have a smaller percentage going out to staff. But you can tell that by looking at your next figure. If your laboratory bill is 8 or 9%, you have average communication skills. You are simply doing what the average dentist does. You're selling the average amount of Crown & Bridge, the average amount of cosmetics, etc. Now, I would like to see that lab bill go up into 10 to 12%. Now, as that percentage goes up, we can very easily operate in that 15 to 20% range for the team. So in other words, as that percentage of laboratory goes up, we are selling larger cases, which means we see less patients per day, and we can have a smaller team. I'm currently working with several prosthodontists, and I'm working with several doctors who have very high-end practices that are operating as a prosthodontist, even their general dentist. And then I'm also currently working with a pedodontist who has almost no laboratory bill, but she is seeing like 60 new patients a month. She sees so many patients a day, it just gives me a headache just to think about it. and she has a higher percent. We're using 24-25% for staff in her case, but she has almost no lab bill. So there is a variation. So 20% works real well for most of you on this call. And then we have the 3-5 for rent, same 3-5 for equipment, 1-2 for office supplies, same 5-6. I'm going to throw a marketing budget in there of 3-10%. And that means that of your gross, if you're doing $1 million a year, you're probably spending somewhere between $30,000 and $100,000 a year on marketing. I'm referring not just to marketing, but to media. And if you're not doing any media currently, and you have no new patient flow or low new patient flow, pathologic patient flow, you may have to go to full power, full up around 10% to make that happen. And right now, during these challenging times, it's not a time to cut back on your marketing. This is not a time to cut back on marketing. This is probably a time to spend more on that. And I don't own any shares in marketing firms, so I have no vested interest in telling you that, but this is not a time to cut back.
Bill, can I ask you a question?
Yes.
If you don't mind, do any of your clients who are doing marketing have any kind of feedback system so they know how many calls they got per ad and have them recorded and all that kind of stuff? Do you know anybody who's using that?
We are using that, Larry. We're using several different sources. There are a number of sources out there that will record calls for you. We have clients using, let's say we put an ad in a glossy magazine. We'll put a discrete number in. In other words, we may have 4 or 5 incoming lines to the mm-hmm. practice, and we'll put a certain number on different ads. We'll put a certain number on the website, et cetera. So we know when a patient calls from that ad by which phone line rings, where they got the number.
So some of your clients are doing that.
We are doing that. Another thing that we are doing is we are recording phone calls with the knowledge of everybody involved. We're not being sneaky about it. All we're using for training purposes. Today, I spent the day on the phone with clients, one-on-one, coaching them, and we discussed that on 2 or 3 offices. They had been listening to some of their recordings. Because, you see, if we're going to spend money to make the phone ring, we better do a real good job of training that person answering the phone.
And you can't do it if you don't have recordings.
And you don't know what's going on. And I will tell you, doctors, unless you've recorded these phone calls, you don't know what's happening. You do not know what is happening out there at the front desk. Gosh, you know, if I can digress for a moment, I have 28 units of bonded porcelain in my mouth, and yesterday morning I came down from my hike and I bit into a power bar and I popped off the veneer on a lower central incisor. So I called my dentist in Bend. Now, I had my work done by a dentist in Seattle. This is my local dentist who I go to once a year and have my teeth cleaned, so I'm not really his top patient. But I called and asked if I could have an appointment first thing in the morning. And first off, I did say my name. Then she had me spell my name. And she didn't even look in her computer to see if I was a patient. She's treating me like I've never been in their office before, and I was there in January, last time I was there. And she said, well, I do have an 8 o'clock appointment, but you can't have that. I said, why not? I said, that's exactly when I'd like to come in. I have calls all day. I'd like to be in first thing in the morning. I have an 8 o'clock appointment, but you can't have that because we're going to have to do a limited exam and at least a periapical x-ray before we can do it, and the doctor probably won't be able to put that in place for you the same day. I said, look in your computer. I had a full mouth series taken in either December or January. I am a dentist, and I'm telling you, it's going to be a 15-minute procedure to bond this in place. Well, she couldn't give me the appointment. So I called another patient in an adjoining town. It's going to get me an extra half hour to drive there, but they're going to get me in tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock. 2 hours later, my guess is she went out and talked to her doctor and said, hey, Bill Blatchford called. He'd like to have a facing bond. Sure, get him in. When she called back, I said, I've already made other arrangements. Sad part is, I found a new dentist. And that's because this lady on the phone is not even close to what he thinks she's doing. And I will have to say that that's not the first experience with that office. And by the way, he's not a client. He's just somebody I chose in Bend to clean my teeth for me. But that's sad.
But if you don't know what people are saying, then you don't have any tools to work on that. You can only suspect. That's the
right.
Worst.
So you should be recording these calls just like the phone company. An announcement is made. This call will be recorded for training purposes. And then you play these back at a staff meeting. You listen to them, and you figure out what's going on. And by the way, Larry, since we're talking about that, I will tell you that my staff, my consultants, did a survey a while back, just calling at random a group of offices, posing as a patient. And by the way, we did call back and say we canceled the appointment. But 70% of the time, these offices did not even ask us to make an appointment. We'd call acting as though a new patient, go through what we needed, we'd go through the whatever rigmarole they asked us to answer and all that sort of thing. And 70% of the time, they did not even ask for the order.
Hmm.
And I will tell you, doctors, that's not working for you. That doesn't work to do that. And so the thing I want you to be thinking about here is what's going on in your own office. And so the total that we see down here at the bottom is we'd like to see 50 to 55%. Now, last year we had several offices. Again, I'm talking about 07. 08's been a little more challenging for us. But in 07, I had several offices finish in that under 50% for overhead, and that means between 45 and 50%. Now, the interesting thing is, those practices were down there in that 45 to 50% overhead in 07, and those practices can allow their gross production to drop 10, maybe even 20% this year, and they're still doing okay. But it's those offices that have that average overhead of 75% that are really feeling the pain this year. So these are numbers. Now, what do you get from this? Now, on your slide, I've made this easy for you. What do you see here? What are the problems?
It's always the staff, really.
It's always the staff. So there's three things that I highlighted in orange or in yellow. Staff too high, lab too low, and no marketing. Now, if you were in business, your number one expense is your staff. Most of you are overstaffed. We have proven over and over again that we can do $1.5 million per year. We can do in excess of that, and we've got some offices doing close to $2 million with three team members. That's one at the front, an assistant, and a hygienist. Now, if that's possible, if somebody's doing it, it must be possible. And so the question we should all be asking ourselves is, why does it take so many people? Well, part of the reason is, if you look at the next number, lab too low. When lab is down there in the average range, what that means is average communication skills. And yet when I talk to team members, when I talk to staff members, they all tell me what a great job they do, and they're all very impressed, and doctors are all impressed with their performance. And yet if I say, okay, what's the last good sales book you read? And that's a good question for everybody on the call tonight. What is the last good sales book that you read? Give me a little thumbnail sketch on it. And what was the one before that and before that? And what were the sales books that your team has read? And how much time do you devote to training your team how to communicate value to patients? And right now, that's even more important than ever. Again, when things are great, anybody can sell. You know, the last few years, the evidence, you know, how many realtors were there in your town in the last 5 years? And what's happened in the last 2 years? We have a young lady that used to work for us for a number of years, and she became a realtor, and she works in an office here in Bend, Oregon, that up until about 8 months ago had 31 realtors. Now they have 5. Interesting thing is, the 5 that are there now are the same 5 that were there 5 years ago. And they're doing just fine. But in the meantime, 30 to 26 other people showed up, and they made some money as realtors over the last few years when you couldn't build houses fast enough and you couldn't put them on the market fast enough. And now we've accumulated some inventory, and it's back to the original 5 again. Well, it's the same thing in dentistry. When times are good, anybody can sell. But right now, we've really got to show value in a way that people see a reason to go ahead and do the treatment. And it's really interesting to watch that. So you can see, with low sales skills, you need a bigger staff. With no systems in place, you need a bigger staff. And if I can tease, and I've done this myself, so I guess I can go ahead and say it, we hire people with no training, we don't train them, and we hire them a helper. Then we wonder why our overhead is so high for staff. And there's your reason. If I were to talk to the typical dental office out there, and I get a chance to do that a lot, and I say, okay, what is the system? And I'll name whatever. And there is no system. As a matter of fact, whatever we're doing now, it could be collections, it could be the way we do new patients, it could be a recall. It could be any number of things I could name in the business arena. And the system that's currently being used could not be described by the doctor, and that's because his latest office manager, administrator, receptionist, etc., brought it with her from her last office. And when she leaves, it will leave with her, and they will start over again because there is no system. So we need to get systems in place to get that staff down. So doctors, don't go home from this call and start laying off staff people because Bill Blatchford said to. I didn't say that. I said put systems in place first, and you won't need as many people. Then we can work with a smaller team. And it all has to work correspondingly with improving your sales skills so you can do bigger cases. I'm going to show you some numbers here in a minute on that.
I have a hard time, though, convincing people to use our simulations.
Oh, my gosh.
And it increases. I know. It's verified now. I mean, I've got the figures three times as many acceptance.
You have statistics to prove that. Yeah. See, if you're not using something like the simulation, you're just going in there and winging it on a sales. You're doing a sales call. When you sit down with a patient on a presentation, that's a sales call. That's a sales presentation. And I can tell you that professional salespeople work on those presentations. They rehearse them, they practice them, and they sell things to your patients. Then your patients come in and say, gee, I can't afford the treatment. Well, simulations and graphics are incredible.
It saves a lot of time, too.
Oh, it's amazing. Yeah. It's incredible. It's absolutely phenomenal. So, please, these are some of the systems I'm talking about. But now, look at the rest of these expenses. You will know. See, you cannot change your rent. You cannot change your equipment payment. You really can't change your supply bill. You cannot change all your miscellaneous things because those are all fixed costs. So the only two that really matter too much on your overhead, other than the marketing side, staff too high, lab too low. And I have literally worked with hundreds, well, 2,500, I guess we could say thousands, of offices and looked at profit and loss statements on a regular basis. You put those two in line, everything else falls in place. If you have staff, and we have a bonus system, we call it BAM, and we always say when an office is BAMing, in other words, they're hitting the production level where their staff is at 20%, it's almost impossible to spend more than 60% on overhead. Almost impossible. So, let's move on. So, the things I mentioned then are salaries, too high, laboratory too low, which means your mix of treatment could be improved by better sales skills, and then no marketing. So those are the three areas that all of you need to take a look at. Another number that is critical that you all know is the new patient flow. And some of you have heard me before, and I talk about pathologic or healthy. Well, here's a rule of thumb. If you have one day of hygiene per week, you have 200 patients in your practice. If you have 4 days of hygiene per week, one hygienist, 4 days a week, you have 800 patients in your recall system. Now, you may have 3,000 charts, but one day of hygiene per week, seeing 8 patients a day, 50 weeks out of the year, you can all do the math on that, you have 200 patients. So the practice, the typical practice with one hygienist working 4 days a week, has 800 patients active. Another typical number that you can use as a rule of thumb is that every practice, regardless of how good you are, is going to lose about 20% of your patient base in a given 12-month period. And that's because people move. People change jobs. People get married and move to the spouse's dentist. People die. People do what I did today. Get a little upset because they can't get me in. And I do want to mention, that's not the first one. That's just a series of things is why I'm changing dentists. But it's all due to his staff. He's an excellent dentist. He's just, his staff is just totally untrained. So if you have a typical practice out there of 800 patients, you're losing 160 patients a year, so you have to replace more than 160 to be healthy. So if you're down there in that 10 new patient a month range, you're getting 120 new patients and you're losing 160, that's what I call a pathologic new patient flow. So we need to do some marketing. As Larry said, we need to monitor where those calls are coming from. And by the way, I will point out, since you asked that question, what we're finding currently is even the practices spending $200,000 to $300,000, these are large practices, on marketing and media, we're still finding that 75% of our dollars of revenue are being generated by patient referrals. In other words, internally. And so don't give up on internal, but I find most offices aren't even doing internal. That is, they're not asking for new patients. So new patient flow is critical, and you're going to have to work at it a little bit more right now than you've worked at it in the past. All right, another number I'd like to take a look at is overhead per hour. And this comes up when I've been giving lectures, and I always ask for office managers put their hands up, and then I'll walk over to one and I'll say, so what does it cost to do a crown in your office? And they generally give me the fee. And I say, no, that's the fee you charge. What does it cost to do a crown? And then they usually give me the lab bill for that crown. And I said, and the rest of it's profit? Well, I don't know. To me, this is something that everybody needs to know. Every team member should know your overhead per hour. Because if you don't know the overhead per hour, especially if you're the person in charge of scheduling, how in the world do you know if you're producing an effective schedule? You know, putting a name in every line doesn't necessarily mean profit. So we need to know the overhead per hour. I'm going to go through an example. And when you go back to your offices tomorrow, my suggestion is that you sit down with your team and do this as a staff exercise, because I think everybody should know this. Now, I'm going to show you an example, and you can use my example. You can plug your numbers into it and come up with whatever you come up with. This is a number, Larry, that we work out for every new client that we work with. We figure out what their overhead per hour is, and this is very revealing, because what we find, well, let me go through this, and then I'll show you what we find. But let's take this practice, this office, and let's write down these numbers as I go through these so you can go back to your office and do this. $1 million in collections, 75% overhead. That means you're spending $750 a year on expenses. And so it's the old trick question, how much do you make on a crown? Well, it's the same thing as how much did you make this week? Well, if you're at the 75% overhead, we don't make any money until October. In other words, the first $750,000 we do in this case goes to pay the expenses, and now October 1st we start to keep some money. And of course half of that goes to the government, so I guess we don't make any money until about mid-November. But that's a 75% overhead. Now, we're going to subtract the lab bill from this overhead number, because all procedures, like hygiene, does not have a lab bill. So Larry would like this. Larry would like a few more clients that have $1 million practice with a 10% lab bill. This works real well for a lab model, doesn't it?
Well, that's right. Those are the guys who do the nice cases. They plan it out. They know what they're doing.
The ones that do the big cases. And 10%, and I'm going to show you something, how you can all raise that number real quickly before we finish up here. That means 650 without lab. So you're all with me so far. Now, if you're working, and the typical practice out there is working about 1,500 hours per year. You can just do your own math, but actually it's slightly less than this, but right around, it makes the numbers come out nice and even, 1,500 hours per year of actual production hours. That's about 180 days a year, and it's 1,444, I believe, but 1,500 is close. That means it's $433 an hour to open the door in the morning, and it's $433 every hour you're there. If you have two providers, that is, one doctor and one hygienist, I'm going to tell you this because we've taken the lab bill out, the overhead per hour is the same. Now, a lot of hygienists will argue with me and say it's not as high in hygiene because we can't produce as much. And I said, this has nothing to do with production. This has to do with cost. In other words, that hygiene patient comes in, and an operative patient or a Crown Bridge patient comes in, they both use the parking lot, which you rent. So that's equal. They both use the reception room. That's equal. They both use the administrative staff equally. That's equal. They both use a treatment room and the same amount of equipment and roughly the same amount of supplies, and the only thing that's different is there's no lab bill there. Now, here's my point. In this example, a Class 1 appointment's $216 and below. How much do you make? Well,
lost.
If you're lucky, you break even.
Right.
You might be losing money. Let's make an arbitrary number. Let's give ourselves a $200 an hour profit on a Class 2 appointment. So that would be $217 to $417. So there's up to $200 for me, somewhere between $1 and $417. And then a Class 3 would be $418 and above. Now, if I were going to run any business, say I know nothing about dentistry and I want to be profitable, which would I recommend? Class 1, 2s, or 3s? Which would I emphasize?
Clearly Class 3.
Clearly Class 3s. And I would challenge every doctor on the team by saying that you probably, not so much you, but your team spends a whole lot more emphasis on class ones. What am I referring to?
Prophys.
Prophys. And so many practice management people, Larry, emphasize having this big hygiene department.
So then you can have class one fillings.
So you can do all these class one appointments.
Right.
And if you will take a look at most office administrators, office managers, receptionists, whatever title you want to put on them, they probably spend more time in any given day filling that hygiene schedule and keeping it full than they do filling the doctor's schedule.
Of course, if they don't, the hygienist gets paid anyhow. You really
Well, that's correct. And that's because, very simply, most practices have more hygiene capacity than they have demand for, which means we have more hygiene time available than we have demand for, than we have patients to fill. So we spend a lot of time and effort trying to fill those last two hygiene visits each day. And so we're down scraping the bottom of the barrel for patients. And if you were to study these patients, which we study, following the 80-20 rule, and we find that we get 80% of our production, about 20% of our patients, the next 30% of our production comes from the next 60% of our patients, and the last 20% we lose 10% on. And those are those people that constantly cancel those hygiene visits or don't show. And yet we go ahead and reappoint them. So it's just something for all of you to take a look at. How much energy is spent on class one appointments, that's the 216 and below, and how much is spent on the others. And that's where, if you're going to be profitable in the dental office in challenging times, you need to put more emphasis on the class threes. In other words, the larger appointments.
Which means you have to sell.
You have to sell. Larry, you keep coming back to that.
Well, that's the whole thing, isn't it?
And that's the whole thing.
Right.
You got it. Now, let's take a look at what it costs to do a single crown. Now, I do this in seminars, and I ask, okay, patient, typical. Now, listen, let's go with those. It's just like this young lady today. She was absolute, this lady that I was trying to make an appointment with. You see, had she pulled my chart, she could have dealt with me. But what she was telling me, because she has no system and no training, I'm calling with a problem, and her only solution is come in, we'll do a limited exam, and a periapical x-ray and decide what you need. Well, how much, then we're going to spend a half hour on that. Well, let's use a half hour in this example. That's $108 to look at my tooth and say you need your veneers cemented on. Huh. $108. What are they going to charge me to re-cement a veneer? They've spent $108 determining that I need it cemented. But let's take a patient who calls in, and I did this in a seminar in Portland just last week. I said, typical patient calls in, hello, this is Bill Blatchford, I think I have a broken tooth. And the receptionist says, come on in, we'll take a look. The clock is running at $216 an hour, and we spend 15 minutes looking at the tooth. What did it cost to look at that tooth? $150 to look at the tooth.
Right.
Now we appoint him for an hour to prep the crown. We're an hour and 15 minutes into this right now, and I use the average of people in the room were saying of 30 to 45 minutes to seat the crown, and so obviously Smile Vision didn't do the crown. It wouldn't take that long to seat it.
But, how about if you have a remake? Then you really...
I have a remake. But I took all of that into consideration, and we agreed with a room full of, you know, 30 doctors and all their staffs that probably we could assume 2 hours of time, doctor time, for a typical crown. And that includes a remake once in a while. So we have two times $216 or $432 plus a lab bill now of, let's say, $250. You see, we're into this crown for $482 cost. Now, what do we charge? There's your profit. Divide that by two, and that's your profit per hour. You want to do something fun?
Go ahead.
Would you like fries with your burger?
Right.
Now, that question made McDonald's a lot of money. That question has made multimillionaires out of my brothers. They raise about 1,000 acres of potatoes. And that question right there, that question and two other factors, the microwave oven and supersizing, Americans have quadrupled a potato consumption in the last 10 years per capita. Would you like fries with your burger? And every one of you have heard that question. and none of you are offended by that question. It's the same question when you go to Nordstrom's and buy a suit or a sports jacket. Would you like shirts and ties to go with it? Would you like a pair of shoes? You see, it's the same question. It's the same question that when you buy an automobile, would you like the deluxe package? You see, it's would you like fries with your burger? So what's the fries with your burger question in a dental office? Larry, your lab is much different because you do high-end aesthetics and you work with a really select group of people.
Well, we do mostly larger cases. So.
You do larger cases.
Yeah.
But across the board, you know, I've spoken to several laboratory owners associations, and 95% of all of Crown and Bridge in this country is done one tooth at a time.
Most of it, 98%.
Yeah.
What'd you say, 98%?
95,
yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
I got that figure originally from Gordon Christensen, and then I spoke at several laboratory associations over the years, and they've all verified the same
yep.
thing. 95% is one done, one tooth at a time. And I don't know about all the doctors in this call, but I will be the first to confess that when I was practicing dentistry, many times I would pick out the worst tooth in their mouth, and I would do a crown. Let's say it's number 19. Now, number 18, for example, looked pretty good compared to number 19, which was severely broken down. But how many times did I submit number 19 saying to myself, why didn't I prep number 18 the same day? And even sometimes I was prepping number 19, and when I get the prep done for 19, I've got a beautiful view of the proximal of 18, and I'm saying, of the mesial of 18, and I'm saying, gosh, that's a mess too. Why didn't I do that? It's because I didn't present it. Now, my suggestion is, and by the way, I don't care what you want to do to remind yourself, I have one office that swore they were going to take some old French fries and hang a piece of dental floss for the doctor to see. Going to hang a French fry in every treatment room, hanging from the ceiling a piece of dental floss, to remind the doctor and the staff to simply ask the question, would you like fries with your burger? Now, you may ask the question different than that, but I have some clients that actually use that question. Would you like fries? Yeah, they've talked about tooth number 19, for example, and they'll say, would you like fries with your burger? Oh, I'm sorry. Would you like to do the tooth next to it at the same time? And before I'm saying this, I want you to understand, I am not suggesting to anyone that you do any dentistry that you would not do for your family. I'm not suggesting you do number 18 if it doesn't warrant that restoration. But I'm talking about the ones where you're looking at it and you're saying, gosh, why didn't I do that? So I'm suggesting that every time that you find a single unit of Crown and Bridge, you simply ask the question, would you like fries with your burger? Now, I want you to do some math with your team tomorrow morning and find out, go back to the last 6 months and see how many single units you did. And then just do some math. What would have happened to our production over the last 6 months if half our patients said yes? What would happen if 25% said yes? And then do the math and say, what would happen if nobody said yes? And if nobody said yes, you still did exactly what you did, no harm done. But if 50% said yes, I'll bet you would have all added $100,000 of net income in the last 6 months. Because that second crown is almost all net, isn't it?
Sure, it just takes a few minutes extra.
Well, I did the exercise in the room with a group of doctors last week, and they all admitted that probably they could get two done in roughly the same 2 hours. You know, work expands fill the time available. And so they all said the only difference in that second crown is the lab bill. So I've done the math many times, and here's the answer. Two units instead of one unit, and the net per hour is three times. And you can go back and do the math yourselves in your own office using your fees, using your overhead per hour, and you will find that when you do two crowns, I'm using the word crown generically, I'm talking about indirect restoration, you will find the net per hour is basically triple. And then see how many hours you did Crown and Bridge last year and figure out what your do some math, and you say, wow, what an opportunity I'm missing here. Now, you can do the same thing and go back through the math and do the same thing on 3, 4, 5, 6, whatever you want to do, and start looking at that. How do I convert more of those single units into doubles? As my friend Ray Bertolotti, and Larry, you've probably seen this slide he uses. He gave me a copy of the slide, and I added another one. It's SW, SW. These are all listed vertically. SW, SW, SW. And I added another SW, and then next. And it's some will, some won't, some wait. That's what I added. Some wait. So what? Next.
Next, right.
and you go back into the next room and do it all over again.
Right.
Just like the person at McDonald's does when you order your burger, would you like fries with the burger? And you say, no, not today. The next customer comes up, what'd she do? Orders a burger, what'd she ask next?
You want some fries.
Fries with your burger. And she does it on every single client that comes in, and they're selling a lot of potatoes. So what we need to make this whole thing work, and this is critical in these times, and I do want to wrap this up so you can all go watch the president, see how he's going to bail us out here tonight. And it needs vision. That's leadership. That's the positive vision, the positive energy of the leader, and that's what you bring to the office, doctors, and that's what you're getting paid the big bucks to do today. The last few years it wasn't as important, but today in challenging times it's even more important. And you know, when the president gets on television for the first time in a year and a half and does an address like this, we are actually talking vision. You've got to put right systems in place. You have to train your staff, and you'll reduce profit. Sales skills are critical. They're more critical today than they've ever been in the past. And I'm going to point out to you that hope is not a business strategy. Hoping it will turn around is not a strategy. And I might add also that hope is not a strategy for our country. Also, that no decision, a decision not to change anything in your practice, is a decision. It's a decision to keep things the way they are and hope the environment around us will change. And I'd just like to point out that that's a futile exercise. No decision is a decision. And I say that tough times call for tough decisions. Tough times call for tough leadership. And that's what I invite all of you to take a real serious look at today. And I want to encourage you to use, if you're not a client of Smile Vision, I'd like you to try one of their simulations. It's a beautiful tool. It's a great way to augment the presentation of dentistry. And if you're interested in our program, one of our representatives will call you. We won't bug you. We'll call you once. And I would ask you, simply have the courtesy to return the call. If you're interested, great. If you're not, just say you're not. That's all right with us. Larry, again, thank you very much for the opportunity.
Bill,
I look forward to these every month.
Bill, this was, we'll talk next month. This was spectacular. Thanks a million. The visuals were great. And
you're
I think
welcome.
It added a lot to the presentation.
Yeah, I think it's a great way to do
Thanks
it.
Thanks to all our listeners. I'll